Everyone, and welcome to another episode of Prod Nuts Pro. I am your host, Marvin B., coming at you from the great state of Florida, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Ladies and gentlemen, I have had a fantastic 72 hours. Now, let me check that. I have had an interesting 72 hours since the release of episode 263, my COVID-19 update with PC Matic. I had a slew of interesting comments from some of you out there, everything from, is this a joke, to interesting podcast. So I have somebody on today who I think will help me with this, and I will introduce him now, Tom Lawrence of Lawrence Systems. Tom, how are you?
I'm doing great.
So let me do this. Before we get into that, let me ask you, in the midst of the new normal, how is life? And you're up in Detroit, Michigan, right?
Yep. We're in Detroit here. And everything kind of becomes the new normal. So the craziness that we're dealing with right now, of course, if you haven't seen the news, New York and Detroit are the two hotbeds of America right now when it comes to the COVID. So we're taking extra precautions. We're locking everything down. I'm trying to throw employees out of my office, but they keep showing up. They're really hard-headed. I've created a good work environment here, and all of us are, our routine is like we go home and we come back here, but we don't go anywhere else. So we're kind of like, we're considering this our family unit. There's only, some of my staff are working remotely, but only a couple of them that come in. We're all admittedly not doing anything else besides going, all of us live within like 3 miles of the office. So.
Oh, so 3 miles isn't so bad. I'm 1,000 feet.
Yeah.
And there's only two of us full-time in the office, so it's easy for us to go back and forth. And, of course, she's not here a lot, so even right now she's home.
So. Yeah, a few of my friends that completely have that work-from-home thing, they're like nothing's changed for them. Matter of fact, they're like my friend Phil says, he sometimes leaves just to leave because he'll go 2 weeks without ever leaving the house because he works from home. He's just like, yeah. But for me, it's like I don't have a lot of my routine. Social distancing has like been my lifestyle for a long time. It's kind of our joke. So all of us are like, we all talk online to people and everything else. So some aspects haven't changed, but locking things down, not letting anyone come into our office. We get a lot of visitors. We told them all, no, you can't come and hang out. We do have a server that came in today that we had them drop off outside our building. Then we sprayed it down before we brought it in. It's a disaster. It's going to be some fun. We can probably get into that at some point. If you want to tell us something funny, it's the previous IT company's use of hot glue to hold NVMe drives in is funny.
Oh, man.
The hot glue came apart and the server doesn't boot now.
Oh, that's better than Velcro. I've seen that.
Better than Velcro. You'd think. I don't know. Velcro might have held up, but then you have the static problem.
True indeed. All right. Well, before we do that, I actually want to get a little housekeeping in because I don't want to forget this. So one of the good things that happened since my last show is I got an email from Steve McLaughlin, also known as the Door-to-Door Geek. And he sent me an email, and at first I was a little nervous because he listens to my shows. Well, he listens to a lot of shows. He usually listens pretty quick and right away. And his title in the subject line was good news. And so that made me a little nervous. But when I read the email, he actually gave me a link to a website. And I'm going to play the clip, and then we'll talk about it. So this is how the link starts. And let me get it playing up here. Here we go.
Welcome to another episode of the Top Tens podcast, Daily Top Ten Lists. I'm your host, Simon Whistler. In this episode, what we do is we have the audio version of a YouTube video that we put out for your listening convenience. If you enjoy this show, please do consider leaving us a review wherever you get your podcasts. Say hi to me on social media. I'm at Simon Whistler, and let's get into it.
Hello, I'm Simon Whistler. You're watching...
All right. So that is a show called the Top 10, Top 10s, Daily Top 10s. And I'm going to jump ahead, and it is going to start right at a section that I think everyone will find interesting.
It was launched on February the 4th, 2004 as thefacebook.com by Mark Zuckerberg, who was studying psychology at Harvard at the time. 24 hours later, 1,200 students at Harvard had registered, and then within a month, over half of the undergraduate students were signed up. From there, Facebook expanded to other universities throughout the United States, and by August 2005, they became facebook.com after purchasing the domain for $200,000. In September 2005...
So I'm going to stop it right there. Basically, what he's saying is what I have said all along, is that Facebook should be known as the Facebook, because that's how it started out. And just because they went and purchased Facebook.com and became Facebook only, the Facebook is the official name of what Mark Zuckerberg started. So, Dore, I want to thank you for that. Gives me a little more credence for all you yahoos making fun of me calling it the Facebook. That's what it was.
Oh, we always call it the Facebook and the Twitter. So that's how we refer to those two platforms.
Yeah.
You're doing something on the Twitters or the Facebook.
Yep. All right. So I got that out the way. So that was a good thing that happened to me in the last 72 hours. So, Tom, I had actually reached out to you before that episode. And, you know, I know we're all busy. And my email probably went to your
back to you right away.
It probably went to your junk folder or something like that. And you're like, who's this Marvin guy? But I wanted to ask you, you had done a couple of videos with PCmatic a few years ago. And I saw the first one. I didn't see the second one until after I recorded with them. But I thought it was interesting in what you did. And I said, oh, let me get your feedback and see not only what happened in response to that video, but what's happened since then, because I believe that was 3 years ago.
Yeah. And I kind of forgot about them because it was one of those things that, you know, you get really busy with stuff. And I was trying to debate like my YouTube channel, I was working on growing it, and I didn't want to make my channel a channel that just goes around to calling people out. But I was so agitated when I first did the video at the outright horrible marketing of the PCmatic team is what led to the first video. I was just like, okay, I've had enough of this and how bad this is, seeing customers use it, seeing the stupid, I think it was, I can't remember where I was at, but somewhere that commercial was playing in the background. And I'm like, wow, this is bad. This is just horrible information and really bad marketing. So like I was driven to do the video, which they immediately, like I couldn't, from the time I released the video to them contacting me, like they're watching social media and they're watching even somebody who I barely had a YouTube channel at the time. They were on the phone with me. They were emailing and calling.
Wow. Interesting.
They wanted to address it.
And you know, what's so sad is I did a little bit of research. I don't do a ton of research, and you know, I'm not big on the YouTube. I don't have I have a channel, but it's got crap on it. And I don't really do a ton. So when I do research on something, I'll half an hour, you know, and I'll do a quick search and I'll do research on the person I'm interviewing and I'll do a quick glance. But a lot of that was watching your video. So I didn't have time to go out. I didn't realize, I remember bad commercials years ago and they've been by many companies out there saying that they would, you know, clean up your PC or, you know, PC fast or, you know, fix my PC fast or whatever. But I didn't realize until afterwards when somebody forwarded me a link to one of the commercials, I did not know that was them. And that commercial I saw was, and I apologize because I haven't talked to them yet. I meant to also do that today, which I didn't get to, but I meant to like let them know that people forwarded me those commercials and they're bad.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing. They got into that whole realm of make your PC faster with Magic Registry Cleaner and things like that. And it's been a couple of years since the video, but I remember, I think there's one of the things I highlighted was I take a brand new load of Windows and show that as soon as you load it, as soon as you load the PCmatic software, it just starts finding all these non-existent problems. And of course, for $29.95, they got the solution to fix all these mythical problems that didn't seem to exist at all before you loaded the software. You were unaware of them. And I think that's where a lot of companies, I mean, look at even the size and scale and scope of a company like Office Depot, who got caught literally lying, lost a fraud case, a consumer against, you know, lying to consumers. A lot of companies get caught up in it, especially big corporate ones, and someone at the bottom, you know, implies it does something and it swings all the way. By the time you get up to the C-suite, they're going, so it does fix registries. We don't know what registries are, but it fixes them, and I can sell something that fixes registries. So there's this giant disconnect, and technicians are like, no, sometimes there's a problem with it. And all the way at the top of the marketing team says, yeah, cool, we can market that.
Right. But it seems interesting because from what I've heard, because I remember at one point you actually had admitted, yeah, it does some stuff. It's you know, at its core, I guess, it's a product that works to some degree. So it's not like we're calling them a scam. Although some people did, I will, you know, come right out. I literally got, you know, PC Matic should be PC Crabic or what, you know, PC Scamic, or, I mean, that's what I got in terms of the response. But, and I know that they're now in the MSP space. So there is some legitimacy there and they've got to be doing something. But at the same time, when you look at the commercials and you hear some people's experiences, not so good.
Yeah, well, so there's a couple different components to it, and this is how it gets easily confusing and conflated, but that's almost part of their strategy. One of the things I pointed out is that any of their blog posts that make any claims, they'll claim certain independent labs did something. They may name the lab, but they never link to the report. Which, of course, to me, it's any, you know, I've joked around with this on Facebook. Anytime someone grabs some random blurry screenshot of text and claims it to be true or titles it, you know, whatever, like, hey, you won't believe this thing, it's usually not very believable. And the reason they don't link to the sources is because the sources would reveal the details. And of course, we're very technical people, and we know, especially when it comes to security, the details matter a lot. Matter of fact, that's all that really matters is the details. Right. And what they had done was, you know, you have the first layer of, we're offering all these free registry cleaning tools, blah, blah, blah. And anyone who works in tech knows, oh, yeah, this is a bunch of BS. But the core product is actually a whitelisting application. So there is some value to it. And very large corporate companies do make products in the MSP space as well that do whitelisting. So whitelisting is obviously the holy grail of it. Only applications running on my computer have been, you know, validated and authorized to run. That way, any type of bad applications can't run. So conceptually, that's good until you start thinking about the entire Windows ecosystem and just how many programs people have. And it, sure, yeah, we can easily run Microsoft Office apps. Those are easy to validate. They're pretty common. But what about all those apps that any of our clients use? Well, that's where PCmatic starts to fall flat. If you're using all these one-off applications, if you look at any of the reports from it, tons of false positives. Now, what you do with the false positive is you report it to them and they'll update their database, verify that it's good, and then push out an update. And that update will then whitelist whatever application until that application doesn't update and doesn't match the signature. And the cycle continues. Whitelisting is extremely difficult. That's why very few companies, you know, really do it. And anytime they do, they require a excessive amount of management to keep up with. If you run a lot of applications, I should say. So it's a very challenging way to do it, but at the core of it, like you said, there is a product that works. And because they've had a reseller program for a long time, I think that just jumped them right into the MSP space, because being able to sell something to your customers and manage it, they already had some structure around the reseller program. So putting it in hands MSP was just kind of easy for them.
Right. All right. Well, I just wanted to ask you about that and address the people that have, yes, I have seen your emails. I have seen your pace on your posts on the Facebook. I've addressed some of them. And if you have more comments, please send them in. Let me know. Marvin@podnuts.com. And I'm sure that I will probably hear from them again to talk about what we just said. So,
yes. Because I have not, and I'm still thinking about doing it, maybe, you know, revisit, because that video was some 3 years ago. And all I really did was run through their blog post and try to find it. And I think that one of my videos has been, like I said, it's been a little while. I did reach out and contact or find the reports that they had referenced. And the reason they didn't link to them is because they weren't independent reports. PCmatic contacted, I think it was AV, the AV review company, and they paid for a report. which is completely different. That's not winning the report. That's not an independent survey. And that's why they didn't link to it, because it's right at the top. This was a paid report. It's the first line of their report about the product.
Right. Oh, you know what? Yeah. I just remembered. So I did ask them, because part of the reason your first video went up is because Malwarebytes flagged them as a potentially unwanted program.
Yes.
And so I asked them, well, I didn't ask them about that specifically, but I asked them, I said, you know, you guys have been in a war with Malwarebytes for a while. How's that going? And they said, everything's fine and peachy.
Yeah, I guess Malwarebytes doesn't flag them anymore. I don't think. I haven't seen anything about it in a while. I think it brought, it's that whole Streisand effect problem. So if Malwarebytes starts flagging it, and it's an annoyance program for what it does with like the registry cleaners and things like that, but is it truly malicious, or is there worse things you can go after? And of course, that Streisand effect, where once you start bringing it up, it's in the news, and now you've just a bunch of people who, by the way, the comments on my video, there's people, like you said, against it, and then there's the diehard, all these people yelling at me and lots of downvotes on my YouTube video because they're for it, and they're saying I'm the one in the bad for even calling these people out. They've done a good service for the USA, because they have, if you've seen their marketing, they're the made in the USA antivirus. It's part of their slogans.
I'm so tempted to play their commercials, but I'm not. I mean, I don't want to come out and make fun of them completely, but the commercials are funny. I'm not gonna hide that.
They're amusing. There's a certain amusement to it, but there's also a lot of cringing. As a technical person like we are, and probably a lot of this audience is, we cringe a lot. It's maybe good for consumers to listen to and be entertained by, but once you get off of it, you're like, wait a minute, that's not exactly how any of this works.
Well, I mean, they did make a point that they modeled their commercials after some of the Gateway commercials, which were kind of cheesy back in the day. Yeah. And I liken it to the Tire Kingdom guy. I don't know if you know Tire Kingdom.
I don't think so.
Tire Kingdom is basically it started out as a tire store, and all they did was tires. Well, now they do, you know, everything in the automotive industry, kind of like a lot of companies. Midas was just the muffler shop for a while. Now they do a little bit of everything. Tire Kingdom was down here in the South, and the guy that owned it basically did a commercial with a little king's, you know, thing on his head and a robe, and he would do, you know, the singing and the dancing and stuff. And it was kind of cheesy, but, you know, that was 20 years ago, and they're still here. And like I said, they're doing all automotive repairs now, not just tires.
Well, and who doesn't remember the Dell dude? If you worked in tech, you remember, I'm getting a Dell dude.
I'm getting a Dell dude, yep.
Yep. So companies have had their different things like that, so.
Yep. So I'm not, you know, trying to say that they're good or bad from my perspective. I don't use them. I just happened to see them in a webinar, and of course the guy called me and asked me to, you know, sign up, and I'm like, nah, I'm good with what I have. I'm not going to look at anything for a year, but come on the podcast. I liked what you did with the COVID-19, and that's what happened.
Yeah. Such is life.
Yep, it is. All right. So let's go on to something else. Now, I should probably, I know that you've got the YouTube channel and people should know you, but there might be a listener or two who doesn't. So why don't we go back and do what we should have done in the beginning, talk about you, your company, and all the things that you do in the in our industry.
Sure. So obviously, like I said, my name is Tom Lawrence. Start there. And I'm easy to find on the internet if you look up my company, Lawrence Systems. I've been in business for 17 years now, and I've been working in the IT industry for almost 25 years. Wow, it has been 25 years. My first job was 1995 working in tech. So I've been in the industry for a while. I worked in corporate IT for a few years. And after that, I decided to start my own company. I provide IT services mostly for small businesses, but we do a lot of enterprise consulting. I do have an MSP as well. It's all under the same roof. It all goes under the name Lawrence Systems. You will find references to something called PC Pickup. And until 2020, we had a retail store. And matter of fact, what a good year to choose to do this. We decided to phase out our retail business at the end of 2019 completely. We were phasing out in 2019, and officially we closed the retail services because we just didn't find them effective in this area. So I don't really do that part anymore. But I still have an infrastructure team, and a lot of our work is actually project work. So we do like infrastructure building, Wi-Fi, build outs, infrastructure cabling, and things like that. Then we also offer consulting services, and this is kind of what leads into the YouTube channel, is we do enterprise consulting for everything from design to storage and other types of engineering, like rebuilding it. So we'll work with like internal IT teams to help re-engineer their IT infrastructure. I'm an open source advocate. Some people maybe say a little bit nutty about open source. We'll go with whatever you want to call it. I use a lot of open source tools whenever possible. And then I started a YouTube channel a few years ago. And right now I have about 115,000 subscribers. And because most of it's deep in the weeds, as they like to call it, tutorials on firewalls and such, I get about 1.1 million unique viewers every 90 days right now. So there's a lot of traffic. Not everyone subscribes because my videos have come up because someone wanted to scratch an itch. How do I set up a very specific thing? Very frequently, I'll have a video on that topic and then they watch it. Doesn't lend them necessarily to subscribing. So I have this backwards where only 100,000+ people subscribe, but over 1.1 million people watching unique viewers.
All right. So when did you close the retail place?
So officially, we decided in 2019, we just quit selling any retail computers. Okay, we're still taking in the repairs. And then in 2020, we officially decided we're not doing or offering retail services. We're just going to refer them to somewhere else. The demographics in the area just didn't lend themselves well to doing the retail anymore.
So. Okay. All right. I was trying to remember because when I went back and I was looking up some stuff, in 2016, you had an article in the Detroit is Different.
Yes.
Paper, and it was the PC Pickup, the Tech Innovator. And I was going to ask you, is that an award or is that just the article title or?
Probably one of the article titles. We did win Small Business of the Year from the regional chamber. We got a few accolades and things like that for our participation in things. We've been in a newspaper a handful of times.
Right.
It's just the way the market shifted so much with the retail. It just became, you know, trying to deal with all the general public wasn't really a good fit for what we're doing. So, but we still service. It's a weird split because we aren't fixing the people who say my printer won't work. Can I help me? But we have a lot of small businesses that work out of their house, like independent consultants that have like one person. So we still do support them. I don't consider them retail. So it's kind of a weird split because they were confused, thought we were leaving them out. And I'm like, no, we still provide support for all these one-off people if they need it. But the general walk-ins is what we really weren't finding to be the best market for us.
Okay. So. All right. I still have a couple of businesses like you where they're down to one or two, but they're still a business and they're either you know, subletting space from another company. Actually, I have a gentleman that I was supposed to see tomorrow, but we got to cancel because of the social distancing, who was in a big law firm and half the firm retired a couple of years ago, but he still wanted to operate and he's out of an office space by himself and got to put him off. But no retail and no residential for me.
Yeah, it's us, and it's weird because we have a couple of accounting services that they service B2B. They just do business accounting and they work out of their house. And I mean, like, they work out of their mansion. How's that? So they're doing very well. And we still, like I said, we'll still go to their, well, not right now, but generally speaking, when there's not a pandemic and we're all locked down, we will go out to their house as well. So we will make those trips and do that when necessary. But it's the over-the-counter people, like the walk-in type of business is where we really kind of we've seen a decline because more and more people just using cell phones and looking for the least expensive solution. And it's really, there's a Best Buy literally 2 miles from, maybe 3 miles from my office. It just really wasn't there. They want to, can you beat their price? They have this special laptop on sale for $279. I'm like, buy it. Oh, well, I'm trying to support a small business. I'm like, no, you're not. You're trying to buy a laptop for $279.
That's right. Yeah.
I can't get it for cheaper than that.
That's right. You're not supporting small business. You're supporting your pockets. That's what it is.
Yeah. So we just kind of said, why even have those less engaging conversations at the counter? Focus on people who actually understand technology or need to take advantage of it. And focusing on those clients has helped us a lot. So.
Yeah. Same discussion here. I just had a conversation with a lady. The owner, my law firm. So now that they're all working remote, now they have to deal with the equipment that they bought. And this law firm, the owner just like went to Office Depot one day and bought a bunch of laptops, didn't talk to me, didn't, you know, hey, is this good or whatever? So this is the second laptop now in 2 weeks where I know that the hard drive is dying. And, you know, no fault of him. But the fact is, you know, they're calling me in a scramble and they're like, hey, help me right away. And I'm like, okay, what do we, you know, well, this laptop that, you know, you installed for me. And I'm like, I didn't install that laptop. And it's like, what is this? And I'm like, it's a, you know, it's the cheapest, you know, yes, low-end processor and a 5400, you know, mechanical drive. And I'm like, no. Where did you buy this? Oh, Jim got it at Office Depot.
Yeah.
And it's just because annoying.
Because we run a, you know, we're not MSP only. We do both project work and we have MSP clients. So, you know, we're managing quite a few computers, but, you know, those one-off people, and they can be interesting. They make for the better stories because, I mean, fully managed are some of the most boring clients because everything just works. They bought everything we said and everything. It's like,
you know what? No, that's funny. No, yeah. Because when we talk about stories, so I don't, you know, I know you don't listen to my podcast, so I'll just tell you, I'm not the interesting guest most of the time or the host. My guests are, because they're the ones that have the stories. My business, 99% of my customers are, you know, in the managed service realm. I can't call them all MSPs, but I treat them that way. They all have a monthly service agreement, and it's at different levels, but they all, for the most part, do what I tell them to do. You know, they keep their systems up to date. They, you know, these are the customers, and the reason they're still my customers is that when it comes time to buy equipment, they're not trying to beat me up on price and say, well, we'll just go to Dell ourselves and get it. I'm like, no, get what I can support for you.
Yes.
That we know is going to last. You're going to have the least amount of trouble with. And if you do have trouble, I can fix it quickly.
Yes. You know, just grabbing commodity stuff off the shelf. And I alluded to earlier, the machine that's covered in hot glue, that the hot glue came apart and the NVMe drive popped out. So the scale and scope of the company, see, this is their domain controller and they brought it to us.
Out. So, okay, go back. Let's start from the beginning. Tell that story because you just hooked it. Yes. Right there. Domain controller, hot glue.
Yes. Go. So, this client has been a back and forth client. They actually consumed and bought one of my other clients. And I'm talking, they probably employ, I don't know, 150, 200 people.
Okay.
They're a decent sized company. They do not believe in recurring fees for anything. This is not something they agree with. So the other IT company that was doing the work went belly up. And by no surprise, we came in and started helping them. We've seen the usual rat's nest of wires and not labeled. Okay, that's typical. You know, they didn't label wires right. That's almost so commonplace, whatever. As we dug into the servers are custom built with gaming motherboards, like Asus motherboards with NVMe's on them and things like that. They don't want to replace anything, though. Some of these are really old. And they even still have one or two of the servers from our old client that they bought this client out like 8 years ago. So those servers were old and need replaced when the client sold their company. And they're well beyond replacement now. But they're all tied together. And the domain controller decided today it was going to quit. And we're like, look, we're not coming out. You should be shut down because they're manufacturing and they're not critical, but they think they are. I'm not going to.
Everybody's critical. Attorney in Florida is essential.
Yeah. I'm not here to debate with them, but I'm also not going over to their office, and they're relatively close to us. And they, right away, they said, we'll bring it to you. I said, that's fine. So we told them to bring it, leave it outside the door, bang on the door. We'll wipe it down and bring it in. So we did. And we're like, huh. First thing it did was come on and booted. We're like, well, it does work. Then all of a sudden it cut out and locked up, and it is rack. It is in a rack case. We'll give them that.
Okay.
But it's homemade, you know, bought parts off Newegg or wherever. We pop it up and we're like, wonder what's wrong. We're like, oh, wait, one, there's a RAID array in the front. So they bought one of those, hot swap removals for the front. It's all SATA, nothing SAS.
You mean the pullout trays?
Yeah, like the pullout ones. We go, okay, they at least bought those. But when we took the lid off, there's also hard drives laying, not mounted at all, on the inside of it. And we're like, oh, that's interesting. And then we look over and realize that the boot drive is the NVMe, and it had hot. I don't know if they lost the screw that the NVMe went to. It is missing, and they just covered it in hot glue. And NVMe was booting because it was pointed at an up angle, but it was touching enough so it would work. But then it would wiggle and then stop.
Right.
So we pushed it back down and because it's all broken and there's so much hot glue everywhere, we just put a little more hot glue on it. like local words, because they say, can you get us a new server? I'm like, yeah, in about 30 days. Shipping's not going fast right now, guys. Right. And you probably want to be up before then. So it still has a few other minor issues. So my staff actually right now, they're still working on it to finalize all the little bugs that came with it. And of course, there's no backups because, you know, we've tried to push them on backups. We've tried to push.
Well, they have RAID, so they have backup, right? That's probably what they told them.
They do have a software RAID, but the NVMe is not RAIDed. That's the boot drive, but the data is at least on a RAID.
Wow.
So, yeah, those are always the fun ones. They're always an interesting client. Their phone system got hacked more than once. And we tell them to replace it. We get the hackers out and we change passwords. And the password, once we found out what the password was, seen it was all exposed, we're like, well, we don't, they're like, how'd they get in? I'm like, oh, I don't know. I think they guessed Hunter 2. We're like, you left it all exposed. So we've every time is like, they won't pay for a full audit, but every time we fix whatever calamity, their security nightmare of a former IT company created. And by the way, that former IT company, going out of business was like a public service announcement, man. This company left a trail of destruction. When they finally went under, they couldn't fix all the problems. And we've gotten a handful of calls because they're local to us of other companies. And every time it's the same thing, homemade servers with like random gaming motherboards and everything just put together in a crazy way.
I don't even understand the philosophy of, I've dealt with a gaming motherboard in CAD systems.
Yeah.
But never on a server.
I've seen this debate before, and you've probably seen it too in some of the peer groups we belong to or different Facebook groups. And it's always like that new person that gets into tech. And the reality is, I mean, there are very narrow circumstances where I want to hand build a server, and they're extremely narrow. And I may use something like a Supermicro does make some options for that. So there are options out there, and there are even support options for things like that. But randomly grabbing a gaming motherboard and turning it into your domain controller and running a company that has more than one location with a bunch of employees that, you know, all these problems center around when this isn't down, all of a sudden, well, whether they thought they were essential or not, they're not working now.
Right.
And just,
yeah. I mean, when I started, yeah. I built my own stuff and I did build servers, but I built them with either IBM or Supermicro, you know, server boards.
Yeah.
Gigabyte. Were they doing server boards? I think Gigabyte was my desktop boards.
Yeah. They've been doing, and Gigabyte does it. And not everyone knows this. If you look now, Gigabyte has some really nice, they're some of the fastest and high-end plus, including support and everything, like next business day they come out, rack-mountable, fully configured servers. Gigabyte's been in that market. I didn't know this. I guess they're really big in Europe, and they're slowly gaining traction in the U.S., but they offer, similar to other server companies, like, yes, you can buy this with business support, with we'll overnight parts, and they make some of the new Epic. They were one of the first out of the gate with these new Epic servers, and apparently the performance on them is incredible. Like, it's your price performance cost was really good on there. Wendell from Level One Techs has done a couple of reviews on that on his YouTube channel. And I personally know Wendell, and we've talked to him. He loves them. He says they're just great. They're solid servers with good support.
All right. Interesting.
They're the server ones, not the Gigabyte gaming ones.
Yeah, not the gaming ones.
Different product.
Yeah. So I had to stop building when I needed faster and better stuff for my business clients. And, you know, I couldn't build 15 custom workstations as fast as I could order them and have them delivered from distribution. So once I started doing that, then I'm like, you know what? There's no sense in me building anymore. I think I've built one computer in 15 years. But that's me.
We still build gaming systems for, we have a handful of people that are into that. So, you know, there's still a little bit of one-off work where we do the building. And of course my staff, and myself somewhat are getting into video games here and there. Well, they're way into it. I play occasionally. I'm much more of a casual gamer. So like, those are the only exceptions to building it. Even for some of our internal stuff, because the used market is so good, we have a supplier we use that gets us, you know, refurbished desktops. We buy them from Tech Supply Direct. They're really inexpensive. They're not like the Dell Precision workstations. I can get off-lease equipment, and we buy off-lease servers from them. I can get Dell R640s, their current servers, for half the price of Dell that have been in the market for a year and still have warranty left on them. So There's deals to be had out there in the secondary market. And of course, everyone knows you can go right to Dell Direct and buy it. They're reasonably priced for a new Precision workstation. You can get a pretty good deal and build a nice high-end server with it.
Yep, yep. And I'm an HP guy, so HP has their outlet store where they do that.
Yes.
And then I have Velocity Tech Systems is a company I had on a few weeks ago that also does a lot of off-lease purchases. Yep. And we resell to techs like us. And there's a couple of others out there. I haven't done those a lot. I kind of got bit on a couple of refurbished desktops, so I kind of stayed away from those. But other than that, we're good.
There can be challenges in some of them, but we did a big P2V. So they had a bunch of physical servers. We virtualized everything, and we were able to build them a redundant array of servers, clustering everything, virtualizing. We could buy multiple servers with full nice RAID arrays in them cheaper than we could build one fast new one. So right. Now they have more redundancy than they had before. So multiple servers, set up the redundancy, set up the storage arrays, and you can build it really solid. I mean, there's a lot of power out there for some pretty reasonable prices.
Yeah,
it's about strategy and thinking about the best way to support it. Because if you do these one-offs, like this ASUS board, you know, is a perfect example. I don't have an easy way to get another ASUS board if the board were to have been bad, right, or if I couldn't have hot glued this drive back on.
That is true. So when it comes time, you think that they'll come back to you in 30 days and say, hey, we want a server? I mean,
they randomly come back to us. They approve projects. We've been dealing with them for a couple of years.
Okay.
And I think almost 2 years ago, the other IT company went bankrupt and we've been taking care of it. They only want us to put out whatever the immediate fire that stops them from getting something done is.
Well, of course.
We're playing the long game, hoping they'll eventually come around. But I think it's going to take a change in ownership. We had this exact same scenario several years ago with another company that was also big, and they only called us to put out the fires. Finally, the owner announced that he sold it and basically handed the keys over, says, hey, deal with him now. And the new owner says, tell me everything he's doing wrong. I want to do it right. And we started showing him, and he's like, yep. He goes, this is the same. Like, it, matter of fact, we have a great working relationship with the company now that they have new ownership, because the owner kept finding not related technology, other ways that the owner, previous owner, was kind of, well, doing things not exactly right. So,
right.
And we now have a great working relationship with them. And as they've grown, they've grown and used our services. So we play the long game with those companies. That's why I'm always not like hard-nosed about being MSP. I'm like, eventually the owner that's old may sell. He's so cheap. He just doesn't like spending money on any technology, but at some point he may retire and the people under him really want this stuff to work because it affects them.
Or somebody will convince him at some point, look, it's just better to do it right the first time and stop trying to do all this patchwork. Cause that's what I've had happen a couple of times. My number one customer right now is a customer. When I walked out of my meeting with them the first time in 2009, I thought, never going to hear from them again. Because they were literally, you know, at a point where they're like, look, we're never going to spend more than this much on IT, period. And I'm like, all right, I'm out. And now they're my biggest client. And go ahead.
Yeah, there's something to be said by that, because it's sad and it's not the way I ever wanted to happen. But companies that suffer either a cybersecurity breach or a major backup failure is often a turning point. If they can survive one of those catastrophic business level events, if they survive it, they a lot of times come out the other side going, phew, that was rough. I don't think I ever want that experience again.
Yep.
I'm going to now follow best practice. I'm going to put in the right equipment. So we've dealt with a few of those companies. We just picked up a new transportation company, and that's what finally swung them the other way. They were hemming and hawing, and finally they realized just how bad a crypto locker event is and how hard it is to restore from backups on thumb drives.
Oh, yeah. I remember my longest client right now is a law firm. The reason I have them is because they had a fire and lost everything.
Yeah.
And they said, can you do better than the guy we have? And I said, I hope so. And luckily we've gone through fires, but we've gone through some pretty big events, and they've had some ransomware, and they had a break-in where they literally had a server stolen.
Wow.
But we were able to get them back up and running. I think it took us 72 hours. This was years ago. So it wasn't like I could spin them up right away. But we got in another server, restored all their stuff, and they were back up and running. And, you know, they, you know, every now and then they come around and they say, you know what, we may not like spending the money, but we're glad we do. And thank you for making us do it.
Yeah. And if they, you know, it's that whole thing. If they think things are boring and such like that, I'm like, that's exactly how they should be. Like, uneventful. There was a little hiccup and we took care of it. Right. And we were able to roll something back, you know, keeping the events at a minimum. I mean, that's a more ideal situation than the situation with the hot glue. I mean, hot glue popping off shouldn't shut down your company of that scale.
So here was a question I was going to ask you. So you said there are about 150 plus users, all in one location?
Two locations.
Okay. Do they have in-house IT?
Kind of. They have some pretty smart people working there.
Okay.
None of them have the title of IT. They have the title of, I know enough about computers that I should probably do some of this and manage it. And they're actually, I mean, like the one guy can muddle his way through the domain controller and add and remove users. And he even knows how to join computers to the domain when they get locked out randomly and things like that. So he's actually, fairly adept at doing things, and it's not what his day. He actually has a job there. His job isn't doing IT. So they have enough knowledge that they know what goes wrong and when it's wrong. But those are the people that are really rooting for us, because they know what needs to be done right. They're always at odds with the owner.
Right.
One time I told them when something died, I told them, like, look, this has to be replaced because one of the fiber links that link the back of their building, the building's huge, and links it across their machines. I'm like, this broke. You need to buy a new one. It's going to be this much money. And they're all like looking at each other. I'm like, what? And they go, we're trying to draw straws. Who's going to tell the owner he has to spend money? Because no one, it's like this horrible conversation of, you have to spend this to get your other department back up and running. And the owner starts with anger is the first response, I guess.
So he's that old.
Yes. The first answer is, I'm going to be angry that we have to spend money. So no one really wants to, like, I talk to the people. I don't usually talk to the owner. He's in his little office and I tell them, and then they reiterate it in some way to make the owner.
Do you sit and wait and watch to see their reaction as they're walking back towards you?
Yeah, I have. It's funny. I have seen the owner. We showed up one time. We were there to fix something, but they hadn't paid us for the previous thing, which it's completely always because of disorganization, not because of money. They're very disorganized. And we came in with the bills because they had lost them. And that I've been in their billing department. I believe them. I don't think they're lying.
Wow.
And they always pay. And I did see the owner. And he said, oh, and he goes, what are you holding? I was like, invoices. We didn't pay you. We should pay you right now. So he turns me around, goes in there, interrupts the accounting team and forces them to write a check. Stop whatever you're doing and write this guy a check right now. And he stands there and the guy's like, I was going to do it right now. And the owner's like there's a lot of weirdness that goes on there.
Gotta love that. Oh my. Well, Tom, I know that we're coming up on a time that you need to head out. So let's try to wrap up. So
sure.
I think I'm going to name this, episode, Domain Controller, Hot Glue.
Yes.
That just makes no sense. But, but I remember in the day that, I worked with a guy where his best friend was a Dremel.
Mm. Yeah.
So when things wouldn't fit, he would Dremel them in.
Yeah, that's definitely an issue as well. One of the other technicians I had trained in my earlier days, I don't know why, but everything started with the screwdriver. He always wanted to take it apart. He wouldn't check to see why it wasn't turning on, to see, you know, this is about a number of years ago, but so many of those custom built systems always had a little power switch in the back.
Mm-hmm,
never looked there. First thing was screwdriver, motherboard. And we're like, stop. It was, if a customer brought something in, it was always like, why is that apart already? Like, what was the problem they were having? Oh, couldn't get online or something. I'm like, I don't think you need to open it up.
Wow. Yeah, I remember those PCs.
Some technicians are difficult.
Yeah. So, wow. Not even checking the back for the on-off toggle switch.
No. I remember him really staring at it, and I came up behind him and clicked the power switch, and he's like looking around. So he heard it click, but he didn't see what I'd done. So he was, you know, face deep in that case there. I'm like, click, and I hit the power button, and he's like, how'd you do that? I'm like, dude, I've told you this more than once. There's a little switch on the back. Like,
So you've been around long enough. So when you guys were building systems back in the day, So I'm going to assume that you were building computers around the same time. So, you know, we got the empty case.
Yep.
Had to put in the power supply. Had to put the power supply things on correctly.
Yes.
Had to hit the dip switches on the motherboard properly.
Jumpers. I started with jumpers.
You started with jumpers? Oh, okay.
Yep.
All right.
So I did dip switches. They were, those are so much more convenient when they came later. Right? I was jumpers. And if you remember, do you remember the cases with the turbo button? The
turbo, yes. The turbo. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And you had to put the thing in. I was always the one because I got good at it. You had to set the jumpers to get the display because it used to display how many megahertz.
Mm-hmm. Yep. 33 or 66.
33 or 66. You had to put the jumpers on to make it there. So that was, yeah, been doing this a minute.
Yeah. All right. There we go. So the jumpers and the modems that you had to get the COM2 IRQ3, right?
Yep. Yep. Set the IRQ, get that, you know, 2F8 IRQ5, or, you know, whichever one you had to want to set it to.
Yeah, there we go.
2F8, 3E8. I could probably still go through all of them. I still know all my AT and DT commands to initialize the modem to get it started.
All right, now we're getting a little too far back.
Yeah. You know, robot V. Everything, man. US Robotics. Those were the best ones. I had one of those at home, man. That was the best way to do the dial-up.
It was back then. All right, Tom. Well, like I said, we're getting up on time for you to go. We're going to have to do this again. We're going to have to give ourselves enough time and give ourselves a topic to talk about, because apparently we don't have anything to talk about.
Oh, and, I know. I could go on forever babbling about stuff, but a topic's nice. Maybe if the audience has a question about if they look through my channel, I'm willing to dive deeper into. So I'm very public-facing with my channel.
Yes, you are. Yeah,
that does include all the workflows, how we do things. We share our sales secrets, if you want to call them secrets. I always joke that nothing's secret. So we've got like a wide variety of videos, even demo reviews of the MSP software in our stack that we use. So I'm not afraid to dive deeper into any topics or, you know, follow up with any of them. So if anyone listening has a suggestion or anything, well, let me know. I'm pretty open.
Yep. And I did have a list. There's things I've seen on there that I wanted to ask you about and dive into. I wanted to talk about open source software. There was some stuff here, but, you know, we're running out of time and we're not even going to get to talk about Florida Man.
Well, I got 10 more minutes at least. So,
okay. You know. Well, then let's, I told you we've been doing this Florida Man versus the World Challenge.
Yes.
But you caught my attention because you have been watching the ultimate Florida Man, who I have not yet watched one of those. My wife finally told me yesterday, she goes, "Have you seen this?" And I said, "Seen what?" And I've heard them talk about it on the radio. I've heard clips, but I have not seen Tiger Man.
I didn't want to dive into the hype because I'm a sci-fi nerd, so I don't watch a lot of TV at all, with the exception of Star Trek. You know, I'm like that. Mostly, that's where my attention span goes. But I seen it. Enough people talked about it, and I was like, okay, maybe I want to watch this. And after one episode, next thing you know, I'm watching six episodes, and there's seven altogether. So once you watch the first one, the next six, just your eyes are open. You're like, oh, this can't get more absurd. Someone made a really clever video that got posted on YouTube yesterday called the Tiger Netflix pitch. And it's a 5-minute summary. And if you don't watch that and want to watch Tiger Man, it's basically someone did kind of a spoof on what the pitch room must look like at Netflix for this. And what's the craziest part is what they cover in 5 minutes that you can't believe is true. One, all is true. And all those things that they talk about in that 5 minutes do happen. So there's some spoilers in there about how that goes, but it doesn't take away that your desire to watch it because they leave out so much. I'm like, you thought that was absurd. They got this drug lord who talks about murdering a agent and going to jail for it. But you also think he's a nice guy because he's the most honest one in there.
Well, yeah, I was trying to figure out. So of course, Joe Exotic.
Yes.
And I guess Carol Baskin, the CEO and founder of Tampa's Big Cat Rescue. And I didn't realize, of course, now this is in Florida. And here's the thing, folks, there are so many Florida Man stories. This is why this gets lost for me sometimes. This is in Tampa, Florida. So it's on the other coast. Okay. So I got to go through like 100 cities to, you know, to get to that. But Tampa, Florida, big city. And this was a failed murder plot. I don't get it.
Yeah. Well, it's even crazier. So Joe Exotic pays this guy who stole his business from him, his right-hand man, who he didn't like, money to go murder her. He took the money but didn't even leave the state to go murder her, because this all happened in Oklahoma. He's supposed to come to Florida. And they got Joe Exotic for the murder of it. And that's why he's in jail right now.
Oh, wait a minute. He's in jail? I thought he was out. They were doing interviews. Is he the one with the hat? Is he the one with the hat that holds the tiger?
Yeah, so Joe has a hat on a lot, but this is where, see, Joe Exotic did a wonderful thing to help create this documentary
okay.
on accident. He loves himself so much, he never stopped filming himself all the time for years. He had his own TV show. He had his own reality show.
Oh my goodness.
So there is a ton of footage going on for years. So when Netflix produced this, they had all the content. It was just about assembling a crazy amount of filming and putting a narrative to it. So even the other person that was responsible for the reality show, he worked with Netflix to put this all together, and he had just an amazing amount of footage. Like, Joe filmed everything. So it was so easy for them to produce this documentary, because all they had to do was reach out to people of kind of where they are now, but also roll backwards with this incredible amount of footage of people that were filmed, because even the illegal, crazy stunts he was doing, he was filming them.
Oh my God. Yeah, because I heard that on one of the shows, you hear him talking about, oh yeah, I'm going to kill her, or I'm going to have her killed, or something like that, right?
Time. Yeah, it was a pretty recurring theme, because he had a live show on his internet channel, and he had like stuffed dolls that represented his nemesis, this lady in Florida, and he would shoot her with guns on his live show saying she's next. So he couldn't blatantly said he was going to do it more. And they also interview Joe from jail. That's also within the documentary, is him. They would call him and do the interviews Netflix would for jail with him. So,
oh my goodness gracious. All right. I'm going to have to study up on this, because like I said, I had heard about it, but I didn't pay attention to it. And the wife asked me about it yesterday. So now I've got to dig in on Tiger King.
Yes. And, it's just absolute pandemonium crazy. And the fact that it's real. And Joe actually ran for president in 2016.
I saw that.
And his campaign manager was the guy at Walmart who sold him ammo. No joke. That was the guy who was excited to be his campaign manager. So he hired the guy from Walmart that used to sell him ammo. And even the guy said, Joe is in here buying ammo almost every day. And that's actually a big theme. Joe liked guns a lot. And so...
Oh my. Yeah. So he ran for president in 16 and governor of Oklahoma in 18.
Yep. Oh, they also interview the prosecuting attorneys. They interview the sheriffs, and they talk about what it was like dealing with Joe all the time.
Wow. Okay. So here's what I'm going to have to do. I'm going to have to study up on this. And once you've watched 6, but not 7, right?
No, I watched all of them now.
Oh, you did watch them all? Okay.
Like I said, once I watched that first episode, I had to watch 6 more. So I think there's 7 altogether. I watched all of them.
So
I just couldn't look away.
Here's what we'll do. I will go and I will watch all 7. And then you and I will get back together and talk about this legitimately. And then I will put out a challenge to the rest of the world. Find me a challenger to the ultimate Florida man, because this sounds like he can't be beat.
Yeah. I think Netflix, like, they picked a winner here. I understand its popularity now. And because it's a surreal thing. We're living in surreal time. So escape from reality is nice. And escape from reality with a nut job at the caliber of all not just Joe, all the people involved in that documentary was just a great distraction.
All right, good. So I'm going to watch this. And just to let everybody know, I'm going to watch this instead of the Star Wars that I was going to watch, because there's a new Star Wars. Well, it's not new. How long's it been out?
A little while.
I don't know. I haven't watched that. So I'm going to watch this, and I'm also not going to watch the Star Wars holiday episode until after I watch Tiger King, and that's another thing that you've missed by not listening to the show. I got to watch the Star Wars holiday show. Did you ever watch that?
Oh, the one from forever ago, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a long, long time since we dug that up. So okay. I may have watched when I was a kid when it came out, because I was a big Star Wars and Star Trek always been my two favorites when I was a kid, which we kind of joked about this beginning of the show that people think if you like one thing, you don't like the other. Like, you have to be a fanboy of one. I'm like, no, actually, I like both. It's okay. You can be a nerd in both camps.
Yeah, people would say that to me. I just never got on the Star Wars wagon. I was on Star Trek. And, of course, you know, everybody that, well, not everybody, but most of the people that listen to the show are Star Wars. And so I got hammered for years. So I started watching the Star Wars.
Yeah. And I like that they both are very different in terms of the way they cover sci-fi. I would say Star Wars is more drama, but I still think it's fun space action to watch. Yeah. So that's a fun thing to even talk about too, is I think there's a lot of crossover now, because there's like their Expanse, there's all these different, there's been a lot of good sci-fi coming out lately. And of course the Star Trek franchise has been really well rebooted with, you know, Picard and some of the other ones that they have.
Have you watched Picard?
Oh, I loved it.
Really?
I watched all of it.
Okay. So I've only watched the first two episodes. That's also in my repertoire. I can't explain everything, but so for the last 6 weeks or so, 2 months, I haven't watched a lot of TV because the wife was sick. So she's now better. So now we're just getting around to watching shows. But Picard was something I had started watching. So I only watched the first two episodes of that.
The last episode, man, all the feels. Like, they did a great job. Oh. You wanted to cry.
It was good. So I got to watch that. And then Star Trek Discovery, apparently. Yes. I've got to watch. This is how bad it is. My stepson bought me the first season DVD. Because I only watched the first episode of that. So he bought me the first season on DVD, and I still got to watch that. That's how behind I am.
Yeah. It's worth catching up on those. It's hard because I want to go, you know, do something a little more physically active, but I'm a sci-fi nerd, with the exception of the show.
Tiger King.
It's out of character for what I watch, but I'm telling you, as a nerd who watches sci-fi, I still couldn't look away.
All right. Well, we're going to end with that, folks. So if you have comments, you know what? Don't send me comments yet on the Tiger King. Let me get through this week so I can watch. Next week, I'll ask you for comments on Joe Exotic and the Tiger King. And then at some point, I'll get Tom back together and we'll discuss. And then we'll talk about some other things techie and try to keep the show on pace.
Yeah. I like dive into tech topics, so we'll try to do that. And we'll only use the last few minutes to nerd out on some other things.
That sounds good. All right, so ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for listening and downloading and hopefully subscribing to PodNuts Pro. You've just enjoyed an episode with myself and Tom Lawrence of Lawrence Systems and of YouTube Fandom. I don't know how you say it.
Fame-ish. I don't know if I'm famous, but I'm fame-ish. Maybe. I don't know.
You might be able to be on my other podcast where I'm going to start to interview friends, family, and almost famous people. So you might get to be on that one too. All right. Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be back here in a couple of days with some more episodes. And hope you enjoy this episode of PodNuts Pro and look forward to the next one. But until next time, holla.